Hey, my name is Laurence Bradford, and thank you for tuning into the Learn to Code with Me podcast. Today, I'm speaking with someone who transitioned from a pharmacist to being a software developer. All of that is coming up after a quick word from our partner. Interview Cake is an online resource that helps you prep for interviews so you can land your dream job in tech. To find out more and get 20% off, go to learntocodewith.me/cake. Again, the URL is learntocodewith.me/cake. And we're back. In today's episode, I talk with Nuvik Lee. Nuvik is a full-time software engineer at a fintech company in Canada called WealthBar. Right now, he's also working on a side project called HabitMon, which is a chat assistant to help people build daily effective habits. The reason why I reached out to Nuvik is because I love his story. In his first career, he worked as a pharmacist, where he helped people with mental health issues. He got started creating software then to improve his pharmacist's ability to care for patients. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. How Nuvik made the transition from pharmacist to software engineer without a computer science degree, the importance of working on side projects when you're learning to code, and the advice he has for people who want to make a tech career transition. If you want to change into tech and have no formal degree, this interview is for you. Enjoy. Hey, Nuvik, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, Laurence, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to speak with you today, and I'm just going to get right into the questions, if you don't mind. I was looking at your background. I was really impressed with your transition, and I just wanted to know, since you don't have a computer science degree, how did you first get into software development, learning to code, especially from a background of being a pharmacist?
So my career has not been too traditional. Like you said, I don't have a CS degree, and actually didn't really get interested in programming, coding quite late. So after I graduated pharmacy school, I worked as a pharmacist for a couple of years. And during that time, I definitely had more time compared to when I was in school. So exploring more different things, different side projects or hobbies. And at that time, I met a person who programmed for a living. Like, I don't think I knew anyone who did before then. So I was really unrelated to the tech world. And that friend introduced me to making websites and how to do the basic coding projects to automate things. And I found that was really interesting. Like, just a few lines of code and you can automate something that takes a few hours into something that takes less than a second. So I started making these small projects. And then I realized that during my pharmacy job, there are some tasks that you can do that were quite manual. And I saw that there's a potential to automate. For example, this is one task we had to do where you had to look at a spreadsheet and you had to find out which prescriptions were due in the next month. So if you actually go through those thousands of rows manually, it'll take maybe up to 2 hours. And then I realized that that's actually a simple task that coding could do. So I wrote a small program. I think it is under 100 lines long. And then when I introduced it to the pharmacy, it worked amazingly. And it took down the process from 2 hours to less than a second, because that's how powerful programs are. And after doing that, I realized how interesting it was and how much I enjoyed doing these things. Yeah, so that's how I got started in programming.
Yeah, that is such a cool story. And it actually really reminds me of someone that we had on the podcast. Oh boy, I would need my notes in front of me. It was either season 5 or season 6, but his name was Sameet Saini, and he worked at Heathrow Airport as a security guard. And I forget exactly how he first got introduced, but it was very similar, as in he was on the job and he wanted to automate certain processes to make aspects of the Heathrow security system more efficient and streamlined. And that's how he first got started. And it really just like took his career so much further. And now, last I checked, he like runs IT for the security team at Heathrow. But I think that's so neat how you used the skills that you were learning outside of work to improve like your work at that time. You know, I know your background and I know you don't currently work still as a pharmacist. So how did that happen? Like, how long were you still working as a pharmacist while doing coding on the side and automating your job as a pharmacist?
I think I was probably coding for a year still when I was a pharmacist. So I had that one project where I was looking at prescription due dates. I had another pharmacy project where I made this small app to monitor lab values for patients taking a medication called clozapine. So that was pretty fun. I think that's the biggest project I did before I transitioned to a software developer. But after doing that project, I realized that there's so much potential for not just automating things, but for reducing workload and improving productivity as a programmer, and not just as a developer, but in so many different industries. I thought I really want to get into this and really wanted to transition. So at that point, probably around like the 2 year mark when I was working as a pharmacist, I started thinking about how I can do that, but I didn't really have any other context other than that one friend. So I decided to go to a hackathon at my local city, and a theme there was about open data. Again, I pitched a pharmacy-related project, and there's one person who wanted to work with me on that project. And after we finished that hackathon, he asked me what I did and what my future plans were. I told him, yeah, so although I don't have any tech background, I do have these projects that I did, and I'm interested in transitioning. And luckily, he happened to be hiring for a developer. So then we got to chatting and talked about some more things. We didn't really have an interview because I think during the hackathon, he could actually see how I worked. And that was probably more insightful than any interview, because hackathons are usually like at least 1 or 2 days, and this one was 2 days long. So then I started doing the transition, and then I just switched over to his company right after.
So you never like were actively applying for full-time software positions. You sort of met someone at a hackathon. They kind of like offered you a position, and then you went and left your job and started in software development full-time.
Yeah, pretty much. I think I was incredibly lucky for getting that first job, because unfortunately, that company's finances didn't go so well afterwards. I had to look for my second job, which the one I'm currently at, I actually had to do the job looking process and everything. And yeah, that was painful.
Oh, okay, gotcha. But I guess maybe for the listeners, we should establish you are in Canada, right?
Vancouver.
Okay. And in, you know, I'm in the US and well, we have listeners all around the world, but I'd say majority are in the US. I don't know if it's different in Canada, but the process for pharmacy school is very intense in the US. Like it's like you have to, I think it's not just a 4-year program, it's more than that, and I know it's very rigorous. Is that the same in Canada?
Yeah, it's pretty much exact same. They're interchangeable. If you get a degree in Canada, you can work in States and vice versa.
Okay, gotcha. So, what I'm thinking, I'm like, wow, you went through all this work and effort to become a pharmacist, and then you left pharmacy, like you know, got a job after you left. So, what led to that? Like, were you just n didn't find it as fulfilling, or you just were very excited by software engineering, or?
That's a good question. Yeah, I spent maybe like what, 5, 6 years in that industry, including education. I think the moment that is really memorable for me is when I made that program to automate finding prescription due dates. Seeing that program bring down the task from like 2 hours to less than a second, I can't tell you how amazing that was. Like, it was so painful just looking through every spreadsheet row and finding that, but being able to do that in just a short program, I thought that this is definitely what I want to do in the future.
Yeah, that's really cool. And when you wrote that first program, what language or technology were you using? Because I'm also thinking, aren't there a lot of regulations like in pharmacies? Like I imagine with like their computers, like things you can and can't do.
So the IT, they have lots of restrictions on the computer, but this was just a local so I wrote it in Python, and it was a local script. It didn't require any external dependencies, and I didn't have to look for any other APIs. So I just downloaded the spreadsheet file from our local pharmacy software, and then just plugged that into the Python program, and it spat out another spreadsheet. So it's all local, and there's nothing to worry about on the security side.
Gotcha. I'm just laughing because I'm like imagining like in other jobs or other professions, you could just bring the work home with you. But there it's like you can't just bring home like people. Like I'm sure it's like sensitive data, right? That you're like kind of working with.
Oh yeah, extremely sensitive data, like a patient's first name, last name, address, and everything is all there. So yeah, you can't really take it home, but
You were able to do it at the pharmacy while you were working and all that.
Yeah, let's keep it to that story.
Yeah. Okay. Just for like context for myself and the listeners, how long ago was this? Like when you first started coding, when you were still working as a pharmacist, how many years ago at this point or pretty recent?
Wow. Yeah, so that's an interesting story. So today is like the first one full year that I've been at this company. And then let me see here. I've been a working software developer for 2 years now. Yeah. And I think I started just dabbling in these in program projects 3 years ago.
So it took you about a year to get, wait.
Yeah, yeah. So exactly like you said, it took me about a year when I was working as a pharmacist to feel comfortable to start looking for a job. And then I've been working as a developer for 2 years.
Got it. And then how long were you a pharmacist for?
I was a pharmacist for 2 years.
Oh, so about the same now, right? Like same amount of work experience from pharmacy to and now as a software developer.
Yeah, for sure.
Gotcha. Okay, so we just got your whole background with the pharmacy and all of that and your first job, which now you're actually not there. You're working at a fintech company, right?
Yep. Fintech company in Canada.
Cool. So were you planning to work in fintech? Did that sort of just come about? Because I feel like someone with your experience would be really helpful in like a med tech kind of industry.
Yeah, so that's another good question. So after the first company went down, I actually had to go through a job looking process. And I was actually interested in med tech, health tech, that sort of thing, because I thought, okay, I do have a background there and I do have that interest there. But the thing was, when I started applying to these med tech and health tech companies, they required either a lot of software experience or a lot of research clinical experience. And I had neither. So it was difficult to get into that. So I started looking into other companies that I thought I had a more of a shot at. And this company turned out to be a great fit for me, both culture-wise and also skill-wise.
Got it. That's interesting about the clinical experience, research experience at the health tech, med tech. Quick side note, is there a difference between those two things? I love talking about like the different sectors of technology. Is there a difference between med tech and health tech?
Some people will probably say so, but I don't think there really is a difference in my point of view.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's what I was asking. I was like, okay. Because I guess med could be just medicine maybe, or
I guess it could be health could be like maybe like physiotherapy or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. Maybe health is more broad.
Yeah, like even like a fitness app or something, or like the thing I always get commercials for, Noom, the weight loss. You know what I'm talking about? I don't know if they have as many. I have Hulu Live TV, and I swear, like every break, there's a Noom commercial, which is like, I guess it's an app that uses psychology to help you lose weight. But I feel like that's kind of like, I guess it was developed by doctors, but I feel like that can almost be, like health more. Yeah
health I guess tech. That feels like health tech.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, so you work at a fintech company, but that's very broad. Like, what does your company now specialize in and what do you do there?
So the company is a consumer robo-advisor company. So what that means is that, I guess, if you're interested in investing your money, you have a few options. You can either do it yourself or you can go to a financial advisor who helps you invest and takes a cut of that. So if you go to a financial advisor, they usually take quite a big cut. And then if you invest yourself, you really have to have that savvy knowledge of what you're doing. Otherwise, there's a risk of losing quite a bit of your money or all of your money, especially if you try to time the market and you're not too aware of what's happening. So the middle route here is a robo-advisor where we would take a look at your risk assessment, see what sort of portfolio that would match your risk. And then when you invest money in that risk portfolio, you kind of get a sense of what you're getting into. And also because a lot of that investing is automated, the cut we're taking is lower as well. So that's why I say we're the middle route for people who want something that is not do yourself, but something that is reliable as well.
Yeah, gotcha. And then what does your role look like there? I mean, again, I feel like you're the one similarity I see from pharmacy to fintech and what you're doing now is like sensitive data, right? Like you're working with a lot of sensitive data, like health records, like finding people's like are probably inputting their social security number and things. Or actually, I'm sorry, you're in Canada. I don't know. Do you guys have social
Yeah,
security?
yeah, yeah.
Okay. Social security numbers and all this other personal data. Are you working with data like that now, or are you working on something that an aspect of the product that isn't, you know, that isn't maybe with the user data, it's more so outward facing or something.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I never had anyone point that out to me that I'm still working with extremely sensitive data like social insurance numbers and personal addresses and all that. So yes, I'm still working on that. And what my role is, well, when I first got started, I got placed into our data integrity team. So what that means is that it's basically aligning all the external data we get and making sure that it matches our data model. So for example, we all get tons of finance data from different organizations, maybe some places to get stock market prices, some other places to get our trades and sells and things like that, and maybe a few different places to get all that data because of legacy reasons. And then everyone has their own data format, and we have to make sure that the data format they give us, we transform that into something that matches how our data model works. So something that makes sense within the business. And that's actually a bit of a grungy work in terms of like data transformations and whatnot. But it's really interesting because it helps you learn more about the database aspect and the data models, which is really crucial and something that I think a lot of self-taught developers don't quite get. So I think I was pretty fortunate getting that experience.
And I imagine that, well, first of all, data integrity team or data integrity, it sounds like so intense. Like that sounds like I work on the data integrity team. Like that sounds like, whoa, like, you know. And I was going to say that I imagine you know a lot about like security best practices and things related to that. Like I know cybersecurity is a really huge field, but I would guess that's very top of mind for you.
I don't work on the security aspect. So fortunately, well, I don't know how you put it, but they are on different teams. So, and we also contract some of the security to experts as well, because as a fintech company, you really deal with sensitive information, and security is really difficult to get right.
Yeah, that makes sense. How big is the company that you work at now?
Oh, well, good question. I think there's 40 something people right now.
Okay, so it's fairly small then. It's not like, yeah, it's not like a super small startup that's only like 10 people, but it's also not like a couple hundred and then obviously beyond sort of company. So you're working on a pretty small team then. Like the data integrity team, I would imagine didn't have that many people on it, right?
No. Like, as for developers, I think there's only like 30, 10 to 15 right now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is that compared to the last company that you worked at, which we didn't really, I guess, talk too much about, but were they similar sized or?
No, the first company I worked at was only a few people.
So what's like the experience like working at a bigger place now compared to one that was so small?
When the first place it was small, but then I liked how like I had direct access to the founder, so I can ask him any questions that I wanted, and I didn't have to feel like I was bothering him because it is a really small team. But on the other hand, I think working with a larger team, anything where you have like more than 10 developers, you need some sort of process to handle. And I think I got a good sense of how a teamwork work within a development team and how you do maybe code reviews for a larger project and a lot of that process around that you wouldn't run into when you're on a smaller team. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely pros and cons to both, and it kind of depends on the person. But I personally, well, I've never worked at a really large company, but the last full-time job I had at a startup, I started when it was under 20 people a little bit, and then left when, I don't know, 80 or 100, I sort of lost track. But I really liked when it was the small team. But I feel like when you're on a bigger team, and especially like a developer team, like there's more opportunity to learn from more senior people around you, and maybe more mentorship and more guidance that you don't really have at a smaller company, which can be good or bad, I guess, depending on the person. You know, if you really like your autonomy and independence and don't want a lot of meetings or checkpoints, then maybe, you know, a smaller company is good for you. But yeah, it's definitely interesting to think about. And I wanted to, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here, because I know that you're really a big champion of project-based learning, or project-based approach to learning to code. And you spoke a bit earlier about the projects that you built early on and how you actually got your first job through a hackathon. Could you talk a bit about that? Like, how much of your learn to code journey that first year or so was just based on projects? Did you take any courses? Did you read any books? Like, what was the balance of that like?
Yeah, so I really like that project-based learning approach, because I think for most people, it's practical. So if you haven't got a start in like programming in your teens, then most likely you weren't interested because of a natural curiosity. But what can get you interested is through a project. Maybe it's like you want to automate your gardening or some other aspect of your job. It becomes a lot more interesting because you have a personal stake to it. And then once you have that personal motivation to do something, everything becomes a lot more interesting. And that's why I really advocate that project-based learning. And what were your other questions again?
Oh, well, I was also curious, like, when you first started learning, what was the balance between like just going at it, building projects, versus like taking courses or reading books or, you know, any kind of learning that isn't building something, basically?
Oh, okay. I see. So I guess to use example, I'll talk about that that app I made to monitor lab values. So on one hand, that's definitely a very concrete project that you can list out what the specifics are. But when I was learning that, I actually made a short list of things that I knew I had to understand in order to do that project. For example, on the front end, in order to make a user interface, I had to understand what HTML and CSS were. So I had that down as a sort of a sub-project, and what sort of resources I could use to learn that. And then I also needed to learn JavaScript because, well, you do want your interface to be somewhat interactive. And so I thought, okay, what can I do to learn JavaScript? Okay, I found this course. So after using that course, I think I'll probably have a good grasp of JavaScript. And then I thought, okay, so the next step to do that, to do this project, is that I'll have to understand some sort of a back end web framework. What should I do? So I looked online and saw that a really simple one to start with is Flask, or I could do a Django, which is more fully fledged. Okay, I'll pick one of these and then pick a resource there and then learn that resource in order to learn how backend or web development worked. And then also need a database. And then same process, look for a resource to learn how database worked. So even though it's project-based, I knew I had to learn a certain component because I didn't have that knowledge. So I had to pick a resource to learn that and then continue on with the next step of project.
I really like how you broke everything down and sort of like reverse engineered what you needed to learn to do, you know, X thing that was like a smaller piece of the greater project. Logistically speaking, I'm just curious, did you like write this down? Like, did you have like, whether it was like a Google Doc page or maybe a project management system or just a piece of paper? Like, did you have like kind of a plan of all this stuff you needed to do?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So I don't know if you've seen this, but this is a roadmap to front-end development, and it is like 100 nodes in that. And when you see that for the first time, you feel, oh, how did I learn all that? That'll probably take years in order to learn everything in just front-end development. So I can see how people would feel really overwhelmed if you just saw that roadmap for the very first time. And I think I was lucky in that I had a friend who did programming for a living. So he was able to help me narrow that down for me and kind of help me understand the core things that I needed to do in order to accomplish that in order to finish that project. And I think I just had it done in a Google Doc somewhere. It wasn't too intense. I didn't have any crazy project management software or anything like that.
Yeah, I actually do know what you're talking about, that flow chart, or it's like online, it's kind of like interactive, right? You can click and it has all these branches that go off of it. I haven't looked at that in forever, but because we have an article on my website where we mention that, and I think we link out to it, and it was kind of old, but we'll have to find that again and have it as a link for people to check out in the show notes, because yeah, it definitely is overwhelming though. I know what you're talking about because there's so many things, but it's like you don't need to learn all the things. You need to just focus on, certain things that are going to help you towards your goal, whatever that may be. So when you were explaining all of that and all of like the things you did to build this app for where you were working at the time, how long did that take you to do? Like to not just plan it, but then to, do the course on JavaScript and what have you, and then actually build this thing.
So I was still working as a pharmacist, so I was doing this on the side, so it would definitely take longer than it would if you were doing this full time. I think it took me around 6 months or so to get something up and running that was functional. Yeah, but looking back on that code, which I did recently, oh, it is horrible.
And I feel like if like 6 months, I don't know, guess depending on who's listening, that may sound like a long time, that may not sound like a long time, but you were learning as you did this. So it was like you were not just, building something with all the knowledge you already had. You were teaching yourself as you went along. And as you said, you weren't doing it full time. It was like a thing you were doing outside your main job. So maybe like if you had to guess, like how many hours a day, like on average, like one or two, or were you doing like a lot of hours?
Probably like around 2 hours, and then maybe a bit more on the weekend
Got it.
if I had time. But it just really varied. If I had time, I'll do it some. If I didn't, then I'll leave for the next week.
Yeah. So one of the most common like things that people will ask me when I talk about, side projects or just building a project to learn how to code, project-based learning, is they'll say, "I don't know what to build." So maybe you have this question too from people reaching out to you who have heard your story. Do you have any ideas on how a person could figure out something to build?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. How actually is two parts. So maybe something in your work or maybe something in your personal life. For example, for your work, although you'll definitely have something that you can automate. So I think one way you can do it is like kind of list the things that you do at work every day and think about what are some of the things that are more manual and things that you think you really hate doing. And those are things that you might have the biggest chance of automating, because if you hate it that much, you'll be that motivated to automate. So that's in your work. For your personal life, there's definitely things that, or definitely ways to look at side project ideas. For example, what do you really spend your time doing? And I don't think it's good to be too criticizing of yourself. Like if you like spending a lot of time on Twitter, that's cool. I do that as well. And maybe you can make a Twitter bot to help you tweet so that you don't have to tweet as much. Or you can make a Twitter bot to look at other people's tweets and then collect the most popular ones. Something like that. Like wherever you spend your time on, use that as a side project, because that's definitely one area that you're interested in for sure.
So we spoke already about how your first job in tech when you left being a pharmacist, you got through a hackathon, which is kind of like through a project that you were working on. Now, for your next job where you're currently at, did side projects help you at all in your job search or like maybe during your job interview or getting noticed by the person who, like the hiring manager?
Yeah, interesting question. I think for this current job, it was a really traditional process. So I felt like I had to take a course to understand basic algorithms and data structures. And after doing that, I felt more prepared for the interviews, because tech interviews, for better or worse, they They will ask you something about an algorithm and then ask you to solve it either on the computer or on the whiteboard. So I had a few of those and I knew that I had to really learn that and practice that. So that's one aspect that helped me. And then I think projects didn't really help me as much. What they would help me in to show that, okay, here's a guy who's interested in programming because he does things on the side and he's interested in learning. But I think that's the extent that which projects help me on my resume. So it is really traditional, and that's I had to do that tech interview, the regular interview, and also side project thing.
Got it. Got it. So it sounds like you did take time to prep for the technical interviews that you were going to be having, but you didn't really have that in your first experience. Like you didn't have like a proper tech interview, but for the next round of job searching you did, you were getting ready for that.
I definitely did. So I scoured like Reddit and looked at what people did to prepare for tech interviews and just followed some person's seemingly credible advice. And I think it worked out.
Yeah, well, sounds like it did because you have a job now and you're working there. So sounds like and as I speak to you, I just feel like because of your pharmacy background and all of the rigorous schooling that you went through already to become a pharmacist, I would imagine that like practicing for a tech interview would come easier to you than it could for someone else, which is like a good thing. Because again, you have like this really intense kind of like medical background that you went to school for. So yeah, I mean, it's really awesome. And we haven't had anyone on the show yet, which is why I really wanted to speak to you, who had transitioned from, I want to say even any medical profession into tech. I would like to have more on in the future, but yeah, I think it's really cool. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about is because you are a career changer and you were, obviously in pharmacy and now you're working as a software engineer at a fintech company, have you ever felt like any kind of imposter syndrome or like, oh wow, I'm really in over my head right now, or anything like that?
Oh yeah, I felt it quite. I still feel it now, and I think it's because when you're self-taught, there's so many gaps in your knowledge about pretty much everything. So that's you feel like you don't know anything, but for some reason you're able to hack on a certain feature and actually release it, and you just cross your fingers and hope nothing breaks, which I do every time I release to master. But I don't know if there's any way around that other than just trying to do your best and just learning where your gaps are and trying to fill in the gaps as you can and as you go. The senior developers I work with, they have years and years of experience, and I still see like they still say, "Oh, I don't know how to do this." Sometimes, so I don't think that you'll know everything, even with like 10 or 20 years of experience, because technology changes so fast. So there's a bit of
Yes,
a lag
yeah.
there.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I feel like especially when new technologies like come about, it's kind of nice because it levels a playing field because I'm just thinking of things like, the future tech stuff, like artificial intelligence and VR, and these things are sort of in their infancy. It's like no one can have that much experience with that when it's such a new technology. You can't be like, I've been doing VR for 20 years, because yeah, it's not possible. So I like to think about that, especially for beginners. Like it's kind of levels the playing field in some way. Let me see what else we have here because we don't have too much time left. I want to make sure I ask everything that I think the listeners would love to hear from someone like your experience. So, well, I guess I'd be curious as one of our final questions to know if you're still doing side projects today in 2020, now that you've been working, in the field for some time.
Yes, I'm still working on that side project. It's called Habitmon, and it's a chat bot to help people build habits effectively. So I know that there's tons and tons of habit projects. Like I feel like every developer has a habit project or had one at some point. But I think what I like about this is that it's an opportunity for me to learn some of the more future tech, like machine learning and natural language processing. And it's also something I use myself, so I do have a personal stake in it. And I don't know, for some reason I've always been interested in like these cognitive assistants. There's a movie called that what was it called? Deus Ex Machina, where the movie is about the first AI that passed the Turing test. And after watching that, I became really interested in how software could really help people make better decisions. Like right now, software is really for really helpful for automating things. But what if like you can get feedback from a program about something you're doing right now, and then it can help you course correct. For example, like you're doing a sales interview, and then the other person is starting to back off from that, and then the AI says, "Oh, some other person had a similar situation and solved it in this way. Why don't you try that?" And in the middle of that conversation, you receive that feedback, and then you course correct right away because of that. So I feel like that is really interesting to me, and I really want to do something in that field. So that's why I'm trying to work on this side project.
That's really cool. And it actually reminds me of when you were chatting, there is a financial app that I guess is like a chatbot. It's called Clio. Have you heard of it?
Oh, so in Canada, there's a law software company called Clio. I haven't heard of the fintech one, though.
Oh, it's an iPhone app. I have it. We can talk about it after the show because it may not be too relevant to people, but I think it'd be something that'd really interest you because it's also really funny. Like the way it messages you, it's like it is like a human, but you know it's obviously not. I think that's why it's named Clio, because it's like supposed to be like a friend, but she'll send you alerts like during the week or during the day, like guess how much you spent on Amazon in the last 7 days, and then you can click, and then she'll kind of show you, like she'll message you though through a chat to give you like personal finance spending updates, and she'll kind of like track your trends and stuff. It's really interesting. But anyhow, that just came to mind when you were speaking. Okay, the final question I want to ask you is if you just have any parting advice for the listeners who are transitioning into tech or would like to transition into tech from an unrelated field like yourself.
I think the most important thing is just to keep on trying different things. Like in software, we have this thing called keep on iterating until something works out. I think that works for this process as well. Like let's say you work on your first project, but you find that you're not really interested in it after a month. That's okay. Just give up on that and then work on a different project. Maybe that one will take you further, and just keep on working on different projects until you find something that works for you. And then maybe eventually at that point, you'll be good enough to transition full time. But really, just keep on trying. That's all I can say.
Awesome. Well, that is a great thought to end things on. Thank you so much again for coming on the show. And where can people find you online?
Yeah, so I try to keep my personal website updated, newvic.com. And the other place you might be able to find me is on Twitter, at Newvic Lee.
Awesome. We'll make sure to link those out. And thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks, Laurence.
Thanks for listening today. If you missed anything or would like a recap, you can find the show notes at learntocodewith.me/podcast. If you're listening to this episode in the future, simply click the search icon in the upper navigation and search for the guest's name. If you enjoyed this episode and are interested in learning how to code, there's no better time to start than right now. To help you out, we have a free downloadable resource with our 10 learning strategies for new coders. It's perfect for beginners, no matter your experience or background, and you can download your free copy at learntocodewith.me. It was great to have you with me on the Learn to Code With Me podcast today. I'll see you next time.